It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up, Caleb Johnson with my co-host Joe Patrick on this final week of March. Joe, we are headed into just being a week away, now technically a little bit more than a week away, but it at least feels like actual regular season baseball games are right around the corner. What does that excitement kind of feel like right now for you?
It's kind of bizarre. I don't know quite how to respond because it just doesn't feel like the season should already be on top of us. It's just weird how the spring training has been with 3 weeks. Though I got to say, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I was talking to a friend. He was like, spring training should be 3 weeks every year. This is great because it already feels like the season's here, even though we just kind of started talking about it.
Well, I think the part of it that's thrown me off is that, like, obviously a lot of the like your position players have kind of already been in the lineup and been working through things already, but you're seeing a lot of your starting pitchers and your top relievers just now getting a lot of that work. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those situations where, like, seeing them come in the game, especially for some of those relievers, is like a big deal to kind of see how they look. And yeah. I'm not used to a spring where I maybe get a single look or two looks at a guy who's going to be at the top of the in the starting rotation. Specifically, obviously, I'm talking about Max Fried, Charlie Morton, two guys who, well, Joe, I mean, let's just kind of put it out there that Brian Snicker has decided he's going to be very tight-lipped about who is bestowed the honor.
This is very important stuff, Caleb. I was talking to Andy and Randy about this morning, like the significance of being the opening day starter and all that. And it's not important really at all, except for this kind of, you know, the tradition and the prestige of kind of having that on your resume to an extent. But it's always funny how every single spring training, there's always like this debate, and like, you know, it's like a great fodder for some people like us on a podcast or a radio station or whatever to talk about, even though it, like, basically means nothing in terms of actual production.
The funny thing was, like, in years past, we were curious who was going to be the opening day starter a lot of the times because we were hoping the Braves were going to acquire someone status than lovely Julio Teheran.
It's not going to be Teheran again, is it?
It was always that moment of like, hold on, you know, I think of like, old country dad. One of them boys looking better than Teheran does, you know?
Yeah. Nah,
not this year. No, I think they're still going to put Teheran out there. And I don't know. I kind of look back on some of those moments with some fondness of like, at least Julio, he was consistent, man. You could count on him.
Yeah, but it's also interesting, you know, Caleb, I wanted to jump in here because it's also interesting when we talk about where these guys are right now, because spring training like technically only started, a week and a half ago or something like that. But clearly these guys have been doing more, and so they're ahead of kind of where they normally would be. In a typical spring training, I kind of find it interesting at you gotta try to create something that you find interesting in those first couple of weeks of spring training because it is pretty brutal. Yeah. And it's like, you like to see the progression of like, okay, well, Tukey, he threw one inning in his first start, and does he get up and down? Does he go two innings next start? Does he, you know, like, what does his pitch count look like? There are these little things that we would normally pay attention to where now the players have like already blown right past that. And I think it kind of leads us right into Charlie Morton kind of being prime example, going 4 2/3 innings in his first spring training start that happened on Sunday.
I was just about to say, I mean, I will admit to being the one who I knew he was progressing with the leg injury. And obviously we had talked about it last week. However, when I realized how quickly he had progressed, I was completely wrong about this, Joe. I thought And obviously, I wasn't reading enough Dave O'Brien and Mark Bowman and these guys who are watching these games and are keeping up to the very minute of what's going on with these guys' progress. I thought we were looking at a end of the month situation or beginning of May situation when it came to Charlie Morton, just because of the timing of when he hurt himself.
Right.
It was in the World Series, which just kind of, I don't know, maybe because of Mike Soroka and other guys in the past who have gotten hurt closer to the end of the season, I kind of put that progress further down the line. And so hearing that he is now, I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, he's already thrown, he threw Sunday 4 2/3 innings, didn't give up a hit, only allowed a walk, had 5 strikeouts. He is, I mean, as far as we know, in pretty good form, ready to go to start the season, so much so that there is that conversation of, is it going to be, you know, he the veteran throwing on opening day, or is it going to be Max Fried, which is just not a spot that I thought we were going to be in. I thought we had to wait longer on Charlie Morton, and it excites me because it means less decisions have to be made with mm-hmm. the bottom of the rotation.
Yeah, no doubt. I do still think it will be Max Fried making the opening day start. Opening day start last year. It just seems like he would kind of be the guy you want to be in that prestigious role of having the opening day start years to come. But I think it will be him. But yeah, credit to Charlie. I think he'll probably be going game two, you know, right away. So and it was just interesting that he came out of the gates, and he actually revealed that he's been doing a little bit more. Let's hear from what he said after he made that start on Sunday.
So I think intensity wise, maybe a little bit higher than just like a backfield game, but being able to get up 5 ups mm-hmm. right now is pretty good. So I mean, in terms of my stuff, I feel like my stuff's pretty good. It's just, you know, location, consistency, like my release, my delivery. That can always get better, but I think right now I'm just trying to build up that endurance. No, I mean, I got to throw 3 or 4 lives before I even came down here, and then I got to throw a live, and I threw in a minor league game 5 days ago. I threw 4 innings. So today, what for me wasn't really about that. Like, I don't really think that. It's more of, any tentativeness would be like covering my position, covering first base. But in terms of pitching, I mean, I don't really need it to feel great on my. I'm assuming at some point it's going to feel somewhat normal.
Yeah.
But we're still, you know, kind of close.
So it was really interesting to hear from Charlie there. Like, he had already been pitching several simulated games. I was only aware of one. He mentioned that he pitched in a spring training start. Or a minor league game. So, yeah, it's good to know that he's kind of been at this thing now, and it doesn't sound like, from what he said, that the injury is really an issue at all. He said that the only thing that he's really concerned about in terms of being tentative or anything is just fielding his position and going and covering first base when he has to, which I think every pitcher goes through every spring. So, good news there.
Yeah, I was just about to say the one thing that he did not have to do in that start on Sunday was go cover first, which is, you know, it's one of those, it could give you reason to be concerned, but they're not going to let him out there if that was truly, truly a concern. I mean, we've seen everything that happened with Mike Soroka and how they kind of held on to him, that I'm just not concerned about that being an issue. It's just one of those. You just want to see it happen, just so you can kind of be like,
right,
okay, all right, cool. You know, he's good. Yeah. However, yeah, you were talking earlier about Max Fried getting that opening day start. I think so. Just because it is a prestigious sort of thing. Max Fried is going to be the guy who's remembered as the long-term Brave more than Charlie Morton will. And obviously Max Fried kind of having that, he was able to end the season for the Braves on a highlight, which, so you kind of you get that honorary position. That's why I think you go with that. But and I will say, Mark Bowman was the one that pointed this out. You talk a lot in football of, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you really have no quarterback. However, when it comes to starting pitching, if you have 2 guys who can be the opening day starter, you're in a really good position, because it doesn't matter then who goes one or two. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have a really strong lineup. And I don't think, as we kind of, you know, we talked about last week with the Braves lineup, I don't think it like falls off a cliff after that point either. It's just so strong with how Max and Charlie pitched last season and can hopefully continue this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And Caleb, we got good news again today. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. Spencer Strider, the guy that we're all really excited about, had another really good outing today, got the start for the Braves, although I don't know if he's necessarily in contention for a starting role, like a starting pitcher spot in the rotation, but he did start today, pitched 2 1/3 innings, no hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts though. So, and looked pretty dominant. Had a really nice kind of wipeout strikeout. I forget who it was that he struck out, but good stuff from him. And I want to shout out Gaurav Vidak from Battery Power, the SB Nation blog, who just kind of mentioned, having watched him, saying that the changeup for him no longer looks like something that you just show every once in a while to keep hitters off guard, but it's like a legit pitch for him. And that, you know, if that just continues to evolve, that could take the top off of his potential, really, if you can develop a strike, a change up like that with pretty easy triple digit fastball. I mean, that's pretty devastating to go against.
Well, yeah, that's what I was. It's so funny because they were playing the Blue Jays, and I get like they got Vlad and they've got you know, other big name stars. However, I just kind of like eyes glaze over when those guys come up to the plate, and I was more focused on what Spencer was doing. And you're right, the fact that he's able to go back-to-back with, like, throwing a 101 fastball and then following it up with something that's 84 off-speed was just making guys look silly out there. Which, I mean, he also spoke afterwards and said that he thought that the last that he'd heard was that the Braves' plan is for him to be a starter. However, you know, he did the classic, like, I'll do ever what's necessary of me, which you love to see. You want that, you know, from a guy who's like, I'd be willing to come in the bullpen if that's what they want from me. I think, and I got real excited last week, and I thought, you know, this is a guy who could come in this rotation and just make it look that much better. I've had to have a little reality check over the last week and go, is this truly what they're going to do with him? Because there are so many names that that he's kind of like mixed in there with. Not because he's not more talented. I think Spencer Strider is more talented than Touki Toussaint or Kyle Wright. However, those guys are already... minus Touki, who we just saw was sent down back to the minors. But I think Spencer is so young and has team control that there's just no rush on him. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they decide to leave him with Gwinnett until, and this would be my hot take, until I think somebody in this range here has got to get traded. Like, somebody's got to get sent somewhere. There's just too many names and not enough spaces, and you're wasting your options and your talent of what you could get in other positions of need by having all of these guys. So I would not be surprised if Spencer Strider starts off the year in Gwinnett, and then after a trade of one or two of these guys, ends up at some point later in the season in the starting rotation in a 5-man rotation, whereas they're going to start the season, you know, likely with a 6-man rotation.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the need for this team to have, you know, more reliable starters. I mean, obviously every team in baseball basically needs, you know, additional starting pitching help. Team would go against it, but I think the Braves specifically, you know, they did not reinforce in free agency. And to your point about potentially making a trade, I do wonder if the Braves say, okay, we're hoping that Waskar Yanoa and Kyle Wright and Touki, like the combination of those three, will satisfy the back end of our bullpen or the back end of our rotation. Well, maybe the better option both for the Braves and for a potential trade partner, is to go get a more bona fide starter and flip one of those talented assets. So if it's a Kyle Wright, if it's a Touki Toussaint, you know, you can afford to get rid of them because you need help now. And if you're able to trade one of those guys for a player that's going to come in and fill one of those rotation spots, then that player did their job pretty much, you know, like yeah, exactly. they filled the rotation slot. So yeah, I think that's a good call that that they could go out and do something like that. I did also want to mention on Spencer Strider with the whole, will he be a bullpen guy? Will he be a starter guy? Because I have heard, if he's not a starter, you hear a lot of people say like, this guy's going to be our closer for a decade or something, because he does kind of have that lights out closer kind of stuff. But I think that the Braves, I wonder if this is something that's going to become more routine for them, but is to have pitchers kind of go the Max Fried route, which Max Fried kind of started as a bullpen guy. I think they always envisioned him becoming what he is. But when he came up to help the major league club, he was doing that a lot as an arm out of the bullpen, especially in that 2018 playoff run and down the stretch there. So I do wonder if they would use a guy like Spencer Strider as a bullpen arm with the eye towards maybe lengthening them out as their career progresses. But especially when you look at the way that clubs treat young pitchers, you know, you can put them in a bullpen role and it might keep their innings down. And you can more easily control their kind of ramp up through those first two or three years in their career. You know how teams are so kind of controlling over not wanting to throw pitchers too many innings in those early years. I wonder if that's something that the Braves might do to help get the most out of Strider while also helping their major league team at the most as they can.
I was about to say, I mean, you mentioned Max Fried. I mean, the one that's more recent than that is Waskari Noah.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, perfect example.
You know, the other thing, and I think you're completely right about Spencer Strider, about them wanting to maybe limit his innings early on. The other thing that I wouldn't say it has to be a concern, but it's just got to be something you pay attention to. This is a guy who's had Tommy John surgery. He had that at Clemson. And so it's really impressive that you're able to see him out here throwing triple digits after having that. I mean, some guys do talk about the fact that it makes their arm stronger the first time.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever run into a problem.
Yeah,
I was about to say, you ever run into a problem the second, the third, beyond, and you watch a guy's career kind of fall apart after that. So that could be something. Not saying it's like their main concern, because obviously, I mean, he's not the only arm who's had to have Tommy John surgery before, but it could be an additional kind of thought in the back of their mind that goes into how they treat him. However, you know, I said I wouldn't be surprised at this point to see him start in Gwinnett. And I know we had talked about a six-man rotation last week, and I know we wanted to focus more on the lineup this week. However, they did send Touki Toussaint down.
They did.
Day
after we had talked about him.
Yeah. And so there is technically an opening.
There is.
If they want to make that move, with obviously the back end of the rotation going, you know, Ian Anderson, Waskari Noah, and then blank, you know, mm-hmm. of however Brian Snicker wants to make those decisions. I'll be very curious to see with the Braves having, I think it's 14 straight games to start the season before they get a break. I'll be curious to see how they kind of go about making those decisions.
Could use them as an opener as well. You know, when we talk about this six-man rotation, it could very well be, you know, a couple different pitchers from the bullpen maybe combining for a bullpen game. The reason you use the six-man rotation is mainly just to, like, give your starters more rest. So it's not necessarily about the bullpen. So you want to utilize them as much as you can.
And with the fact that Max Fried and Charlie Morton have been pitching on the same day, one of them is going to get an additional day of rest to start the season out, which could be another strategic move for Brian Snicker of how he wants to go about, setting up those days. However, when it comes to the lineup itself, I'm trying to remember any other like big news that came out. We talked about Touki, Drew Waters, who I never really considered having a realistic shot. It would have been a shock had he been a part of this major league club. He was also sent down Jacob Webb, who spent time up and down between the minors. He's another one who gets sent down to the minors. Ronald Acuna, the projection now there is for first week of May, which excites me that he is that ready to come back. And it's honestly, from everything that I've heard and from hearing Snit talk, sounds like him coming back first week of May is really just a being overly cautious with him. That, you know, Ronald's like, I'm ready to go now. Like, you know, baseball is starting. I want to play. So, yeah, so Ronald's back. But that does cause the lineup to go through some phases, it seems like, before we start the season.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about him in a little bit. We'll get through a little bit of news remaining. Did want to say, it's got to be so hard for Acuna to sit out this time, because I think every major league player is like gearing up and kind of ready for the season to start. No player, probably more than Acuna, would love, you know, loves this time of year and getting ready for that opening day. And just for him not to be, you know, with the rest of his teammates in that, you know, fully, is got to be tough for a player like him. You know, the thing I want to discuss with him, and I guess this goes for William Contreras as well, is kind of is the positions that these players could be playing. So obviously Ronald Acuna played mostly in right last year, has played center though plenty with the Braves. Alex Anthopoulos spoke in a media availability that I was on. This must have been the Colin McHugh media availability. And he was talking about Acuna's position. He said that he actually went and had a conversation with Acuna talking about, would he play in right? Would he play in center? It sounds like Acuna definitely wants to play in right field. When Alex Anthopoulos was telling us about this conversation, he was saying that like he had had a conversation with Acuna, and Acuna was fully on board with playing center field, you know, if and when the team needs him, which I'm sure he is. He's not going to be like, I'm not going out there and playing center today. But I do wonder if there may be any kind of friction there, I guess, in terms of whether, you know, Brian Snicker decides he wants to use him in center field more often than maybe he initially thought he would need to. I think a lot of this depends on, you know, how well Adam Duvall plays out there to start the season, because it sounds like Adam Duvall will be the pretty much the everyday center fielder. Him and Guillermo Heredia will probably, you know, split some time there. But it will be interesting. There's not really a natural top center fielder out there except for Acuna. He's probably your best center fielder and your best right fielder. So it's kind of a matter of where you feel like you get the most value with him, but also kind of keeping him the happiest, which is probably in right field. Anyway, some interesting stuff there, but the reason this relates to William Contreras, which I just mentioned, is that it sounds like he may be in for a position change, which you don't often hear about catchers changing positions, just because it's such a unique position that requires so much time kind of perfecting that skill. But I mean, if anything we saw last year, it's that William's still far, far away from perfecting that skill, so they might as well use him somewhere else, maybe.
Well, Joe, I would like to give credit to a friend of mine, Colin Hubbard, who brought it to my attention.
Shout out, Colin.
There is another pretty well-known Major League Baseball player, former Brave, who started his career off at catcher and is not even remotely thought of in that position, and has gone on to have a great career. Josh Donaldson was a catcher.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so when
you
think
about Charlie Culberson, just because he's played every other position.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But you never, but you know, in all seriousness though, like you never thought of Charlie as his offensive prowess. I mean, you know, he came through clutch in moments, but that was never really his thing. Whereas you clearly see that William has that major league potential, or that not potential, that he has the ability at the plate. It's just he is such a liability behind the plate that and I love how it's being used as like a, well, you know, we need to get William's bat in the lineup somewhere, and we've got that position covered right now. And it was like, you have it covered because you went and signed Pena in the offseason. Like, you didn't have to go spend that money to go get a backup catcher when you technically had it, had one, if you didn't think that this was a route you planned to go of, yeah, William Contreras is going to be playing some time in right field.
Oh, would you look at that? All the catcher spots are taken up. Oh, yeah. How'd that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, yeah, we need you to, you know, why don't you go stand out in the outfield and see if he can figure that out. But also, I was surprised to see that Snit said there was some plans to try Contreras out at second and third base, just because that is a position of need depth wise. Because, you know, the funny thing about Freddie Freeman being gone now is, Joe, I think you were the one who said, you know, some of these guys are going to get to actually rest now. It takes days off. And so because you're going to have guys taking days off, there's not, you know, a whole lot of depth. I know they had signed, Brock Holt to a minor league deal with a major league option or something like that. And there are some other names, honestly, guys that I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to. I sent it to you a while back, Joe, of like, man, I really got to start like paying attention to some of these, you know, guys who are going to be bench pieces now that Adrianza and some of these others are gone. But you pointed out the fact that it's not going to matter as much because you have the DH now. And so there's not going to be, the level of pinch hitting that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm all for this. I'm all for trying players at different positions, and maybe none of it sticks. Maybe he just does still remain a catcher, in which case it's probably going to take him some more time. But if you know, opening up his positions, getting him familiar with a right field spot or something like that, can allow him to be more impactful in games, then yeah, man, I'm all for it. And I'm just looking at his stats. So, if you look at his top line numbers from last year, obviously they're really bad. He really fell apart at the, you know, not even at the end. I would just, I guess, just kind of midway through last year. But like he played almost all of May last year. And in May, let's see, I just had this pulled up. Well, now it's not showing. Okay, here it is. In May, he hit .240, but he had 5 homers and he OPS'd .841 in 78 at bats in May. I mean,
I was just about to say he hit 5 home runs. How many did he hit for the season, Joe?
He hit 8 home runs in the season. Yeah. And he ended up hitting .215. He was actually his batting average was as low as .195 at one point, and he ended the season just barely over the 700 mark at 701 OPS. So, but he clearly just kind of like fell apart. And I do wonder if maybe some of the defensive struggles he was having kind of impacted him on the offensive end. I mean, I'm sure that he was kind of feeling the stress because, you know, Snit, when he would have some of those moments, Snit was pissed, and rightfully so. I mean, like, sometimes they were, like, costing the team, you know, runs and potentially a game. So, I think that we've seen a little bit of William Contreras in terms of what he can provide, but I'm more optimistic on him, I feel like, than a lot of people. So I'm excited by this news. And I gotta say, those home runs, a lot of them were like opposite field power home runs. Like, I remember one in Philadelphia specifically that was like just really, really impressive. It's and we saw him right when he came up. I don't know if you remember when Tyler Flowers and Travis d'Arnaud both got an illness during the COVID year when everyone thought they had COVID, but it turns out they just had like colds or whatever. And so Austin Jackson and William Contreras came up, and William played well. He was hitting the ball well, roped some doubles. So I like him. I like him.
Oh, I always have, and I think I remember when that was going on with Austin Jackson and William Contreras, where
Alex Jackson.
Alex Jackson. Thank you.
I misnamed him.
I'm trying to remember why Austin Jackson sticks out too. But anyways, there were like clearly they had set Jackson as in the order what was higher than William Contreras was, but when you saw him play, like, Jackson was super uninspiring at the plate. Yeah. Like his abilities were clearly defensively as a catcher, which definitely have their importance, but when you're looking for that spark, when you're looking for that excitement, you know you want to see that, you want to see what a guy's ability is behind the plate. That's why, and it's even one of those, you know, you think about defensive abilities, like Pache was sent out of Atlanta. Like he is a part of a trade because very uninspiring at the plate. And, you know, maybe he can kind of like resurrect that in Oakland or whatever, but, it is more important for that offensive ability to be there. And so if Contreras can be serviceable out in right field and let Acuña play center, I'd be perfectly fine with that. I assume that the thought is they don't want him playing out in center field. There's just more movement, more sure. running to do. You know, guy's going to be more tired than to get back up in that leadoff spot, and maybe doesn't produce to the level that he's used to, which also, I mean, then that could lean more on Snit of you just got to get more creative and, you know, just not have him play out there every day and maybe swap into a DH role when you move all of those other pieces around. Like it won't be, I think this will be truly a year where you'll see a lot of movement in and out of the lineup, obviously just for the fact that it's going to start off the season without Acuña, but then just because there is some creativity to be had to get guys rest and also get them consistent at-bats.
Yeah, I think the DH is actually going to lead to a lot more different, varied lineups for the Braves throughout the year. Not necessarily the batting order, but the positions the guys are playing, because you can use the DH as a kind of a time to rotate players out to give them some rest.
And it's so funny because the argument against the DH in the National League is it kills strategy. You know, it kills the double switch and what you do. But in fact, it's like, well, no, I think it just shifts strategy to a different place, where you don't end up in a in a World Series with a pitcher coming up to the plate in a defining moment with runners in scoring position, and you're like, up, free out, and you know that kills any you know, let me go to the bathroom now because I don't have to worry about what's going to happen with anyone except for, you know, maybe Max Fried at plate.
I got to say, with Contreras, you know, catchers always have guns for arms. So, like, stick him out there in that Braves small right field, you know, with the chop house. And you would think you've got somebody competent out there who couldn't, you know, maybe get an assist or two or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it works out. But I'm excited to hear the news that they're interested in moving him around. I would say that's got to speak well to what his bat and what they've seen from him, if they're so intent on getting him in there. So interesting news from William Contreras. So Caleb, let's dig into this lineup a little bit more. I pulled up the lineups from Mark Bowman. He put his predictions out on MLB.com, Braves.com, which I would definitely recommend everybody go out and check out. I think Bowman probably has the best pulse of the team, I would say, of everything I've experienced. So here's what he's got. He's got kind of like essentially two different lineups, one versus a righty, one versus a lefty. And this is like the pre-Acuña lineups before we have him back in action. Versus right-handers, you rotate Eddie Rosario to the top of that lineup, which is where he hit in the playoffs last year. Eddie Rosario, Ozzie Albies, Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Marcelo Zuna as your top five. I think that has kind of been what we would all predict. That's the top five you would have if Acuña was there, except for Acuña batting leadoff. So you got those five, and then Adam Duvall. Here's where it gets interesting. Alex Dickerson, the new signing, as the DH, hitting seventh, only playing against right-handers as a righty specialist, then Dansby and Travis d'Arnaud, and then against the lefties, just to lay this out for our listeners, Caleb, and then we'll kind of get into what we think. Against lefties, you hit Ozzie Albies at the top of the order because he absolutely rakes lefties. He's like an MVP caliber hitter against left-handed pitching. Matt Olson hitting second against lefties, followed by Austin Riley, Ozuna, Duvall. Then you get Rosario down in sixth against lefties instead of first. And then Dansby, Travis d'Arnaud, and then Bowman has Guillermo Heredia manning center field against lefties, rotating in for Alex Dickerson. And then it's very complicated, but then you would have Ozuna batting as a DH against lefties, where he'd be playing in left field against right-handed pitching. But again, that's where it gets confusing, because you can rotate in all sorts of different ways with the DH. I don't know. Any initial thoughts, Caleb, on these lineups?
Well, I was going to say, first off, when it's funny, when you talk about Bowman, you know, and having a pulse on the team, I think he is great from a readership perspective of, like, he's concerned about what the, like, common fan is concerned about. Like, hey, what's the lineup going to look like? Or what's the whole situation going on with the opening day starter? Where a lot of these other guys are obviously, like, they are incredible work, but they're more going into, like, specific details, getting stories behind certain things.
More narrative, which is why driven.
That's why I love Bowman, because sometimes, like, I just want to know, what is this lineup going to look like?
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I definitely think, you know, I mean, honestly, if you're listening to Joe and I, you're not listening for this, like, super technical analysis. You're the everyday fan. Yeah. And I'm cool with that because I like talking to you people.
We are too.
So just you know, just put it exactly.
I get scared talking to people, like, who know too much about baseball. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary.
You know, you start throwing all of and like I'm not anti you know, stats and all that sort of stuff, but there just gets to be a point where I don't care anymore. Like, you know, like tell me the stats where a guy looks good and I'm like, all right, that makes sense. Cool, let's go. And then it comes down to the, you know, the old eye test for me a lot of the times. But I say all that to say the having Alex Dickerson as your designated hitter as a reigning World Series champion team does not give off exciting vibes. I will say that. I understand the thought process going behind, like, what's going into this. And it's also just one of those, like, yeah, now I get why they're doing this with William Contreras. And, man, I cannot wait for Ronald Acuna to get back. Because it's one of those, like, I'm not saying, and I've also, I guess I should clarify, like, I've cooled my opinions on Freddie Freeman's effect on this team. I think there will still be a level of figuring things out just because he was such a big voice and is now gone. However, where this team was 2 weeks ago, being like down in the dumps about Freddie being gone, I think once they, you know, getting some consistent time with Matt Olson and seeing him play, I think that's going to just quickly go away. And not to say that, like, Freddie wasn't a leader in this clubhouse and all of those other kinds of things, but maybe I oversold or over understood Freddie's impact in this team. And maybe it won't be as big of an impact unless it's a guy like Dansby Swanson, who's over here, you know, joking that, oh, we should take caution tape and throw caution tape over Freddie Freeman's locker in the Braves clubhouse. And no one, not only should no one ever wear number 5, no one should even sit in the seat that Freddie Freeman once sat in. You know, we've got to have a shrine now. Joe, I'm going to need you to keep an eye out when you go to the clubhouse next week, you know, just to find out, hey, are there, like, flowers and a picture of Freddie with Charlie, you know, like, is the picture
the
of Freddie
family
catching the
yeah
ball, yeah, to win the World Series, like, is that, you know, is there a nice gold frame in his,
like,
locker
Charlie
with flowers?
Hologram.
Exactly.
So they can just, you know, have that youthful vibe in the clubhouse, yeah.
I'll be curious to find out what they do about that, but when it comes to the, like, the lineup itself, yeah, I think Matt Olson's going to slide in just perfectly. So my biggest concern is the fact that with no Acuna, that spot is just weak. Like, whether it's Alex Dickerson having to be in there or Guillermo Heredia, who, look, we all love Heredia. The swords, the dude's just hilarious. I sent Joe a clip the other day of Heredia was on Snapchat using, like, funny face filter, and had Ozzy, and then they got Austin
hilarious
Riley with it. Yeah, you know, they're like, he is a great clubhouse guy and fun teammate and keeping everybody's spirits high. He is just not a guy that I really want in the lineup on a consistent basis, as we saw last season when he was having to do that early on in the year. I think it's going to be another situation where we're probably going to get frustrated as the consistency won't be there. But we're doing this for a month before we get back to a lineup that looks stronger. That could also, as we've been saying this entire time, add a William Contreras and maybe get that much stronger.
Yeah, I think that when I look at this line, I'm with you on the Freddie part. You know, my take all along has been you can replace his production through Matt Olson, and I actually think that the Braves in acquiring Matt Olson have not only replaced Freddie Freeman's production, but they've actually gotten more production later on in the six, seventh years of Matt Olson's contract, as opposed to what they would have gotten on like the sixth year potentially of a Freddie Freeman deal. So I think that even long term, they're in even better shape by getting Matt Olson. What I've said, and I think I still maintain, but this will be proven kind of correct or false as the season goes on, is you can't really replace what Freddie Freeman gives you kind of in the intangibles aspects. Uh-huh. You know, what he does day to day, the way he motivates players to play or maybe doesn't motivate, you know, I think we're gonna find out whether a lot of that stuff was lore or whether there was something more real behind it, based on the vibe of the clubhouse this year. But you know, I think that the book is still out on that aspect. But just in terms of the quality of the hitter that you get, I think Matt Olson is, you know, I think if you compare the numbers, he had a slightly better season than Freddie did last year. And you would think that with his age difference that he's only has, you know, higher projections for this year as well. So you may have even maybe a slight upgrade at first base, but we'll just call it dead even. I do think that when you look at a player like Austin Riley, I feel like he's not getting talked about enough. I think last year, if you look at his numbers, he was pretty lucky. Like the BABIP was way high. But to me, it's just overall seeing his progression as a hitter from 2019 when he came up in May that year to where he was like at the end of last year as a very seasoned hitter. I mean, if you look at his numbers, In 2019, he had 108 strikeouts and 16 walks. Last year, he had 100, and that was in 274 at bats. Last year, and essentially double the amount of at bats, he had 168 strikeouts, so only like 50% more strikeouts and 52 walks. So that's what, like three times the amount of walks as he had. Very good signs, I think, from Austin Riley. And despite the fact that he got lucky last year, I still look at him as honestly being a guy who could compete and be in MVP contention again like he was last year. And if he is that guy, I think the combination of him with Matt Olson, with Ronald Acuña Jr., who we kind of have to expect to be back for most of this season, I think it just has all the makings of another really potent lineup, a lineup that's going to be able to score a ton of runs. And I think also a lineup that when you look at Matt Olson, just the way he's able to kind of use that right side, I think that they're going to utilize that right field. I think that they can kind of utilize that short porch in the chop house a little bit. So I just really like this lineup, again, with Ronald Acuña Jr. in it. Without Ronald Acuña Jr. in it, when you're looking at Alex Dickerson and things, but I think Alex Dickerson will be a perfectly fine like guy who can rotate in every once in a while, like a Sunday day game, and have, you know, some productive days, no doubt, but not the kind of player you want playing every day for you. But I think, you know, there's, again, like you said, also with the rotations, the way that this team will be able to use the DH and get several players in there, you know, I just think it looks like a very, very good lineup and one that you can get guys rotated in and out and kind of keep players fresh throughout the year. I think that you could have a much more kind of conventional season in that respect, as opposed to like the thing kind of thing we saw last year where Freddie and Dansby and Riley played like every single day. Like those guys played, I think, I don't know how many games they missed between them. It couldn't have been more than a handful. So, I mean, I think that this team this is where its strength was and has been really for the last couple of years. I just think it will continue to be that.
It's so interesting, Joe, that, you know, sometimes right or wrong, you know, things happen, a lot happens, and we gloss over things here or there. As we got talking about this lineup, you know, I look at the fact that we are now at a point, like, we don't question Marcell Ozuna being back. Like, that is a big deal.
It is.
I think there is, especially when it comes to, like, all of the legal stuff that he was brought into, you know, the video came out, and that was something that was going to, I had been very strong at one point in saying, this guy is not only not going to play for the Braves anymore, he's not going to play in Major League Baseball again. However, the video comes out, we see what actually transpired. It's not to the extreme level that was being thrown out.
I would recommend everybody just go look at the video for themselves to see what's on tape, because I don't know how those police officers ended up writing down in their report what they claimed they saw when the video is literally on and sees them going into the room while it's happening. And literally the only thing you see is Ozuna kind of push his wife away. There's a shove. And that's it.
And it's one of, I was just about to say, it is one of those awkward positions where it's like, it's not like, let's not act like this is a good thing. Let's not act like, you know, he is some saint.
Absolutely. Totally.
Or anything like that.
Clearly a dysfunctional kind of domestic relationship here between the two of them.
And honestly, like, if, you know, I hope they go their separate ways, because there is a history with them. Yeah. And that had been brought up as part of this, is that, you know, there was a history where, you know, he had to call because of things that she was doing. So it's just, it's a bad situation. However, I think this idea that we were given, especially presented by the police department, was a very graphic, you know, like, despicable.
It was holding her, pinning her against the wall with a choke,
cast.
With a choke, and then hitting her with a cast, which like, nothing like that was on the police footage.
Which is why I go back and say, like, I you know, it's one of those things that we've like completely brushed past now at this point, and it's just how like news cycles work in that way.
Yep.
However, that is why on opening day, Marcell Ozuna is not only a member of this team, but a prominent member of this team, as they're going to be looking for that offense that he had 2 years ago to be brought back. And it's just wild, because it's one of those, like, this team won a World Series without Marcell Ozuna and without Ronald Acuna Jr., and they're getting both of those players back, which is just like, boo!
Marcell Ozuna, In 2020, the COVID year, Marcell Ozuna led the National League in home runs and RBIs, and only if he had led in batting average would he have won the Triple Crown. And what was his batting average? His batting average was .338. I think he came in second to Freddie. I think Freddie had the better batting average that year and took away the Triple Crown. And then Freddie obviously ends up winning MVP that year over Marcell Ozuna. But it's just, I mean, it's crazy. I think you're right. Like, I think we're not, I think people in general are not talking about Marcell Ozuna and the impact he's going to have on this team because of the circumstances, because it's just uncomfortable to talk about a guy who's been through all this stuff, and I'm, you know, some of it absolutely brought upon himself. But, you know, when you just kind of look at where the Braves are, he's absolutely going to be a huge, you know, member of the team this season. And, you know, it goes to something I was saying on Andy and Randy today, Caleb, which is that, you know, they were asking me, like, who's this, like, a big year for? Like, who is it, like, a career, like, you know, one of those kind of career-defining seasons? And I think that for the Braves, you have many guys who this season is important for individually, but all for different reasons. So I think that when you look at a guy like William Contreras, it's a big season for him for some of the reasons we talked about before, whether it's finding himself a new position or what he can provide for the team offensively, all that stuff. But I think when you look at Marcell Ozuna, it's also a super important year for him to kind of get his career back on track. But again, for totally different reasons than it would be for a young player And then you look at a guy like Dansby Swanson, who it's also a big year for him. When you look at it, this is the last year that he's under team control, and he'll be, you know, facing free agency, and the Braves will have to figure out what they want to do with him down the road. And a lot, I'm sure, you know, what he does this season will be, you know, a big factor in all that. Big season for him too, for different reasons than Ozuna and for a guy like Contreras. So it's that's what makes this team so interesting to me, is that you have so many of those types of players. Ron Acuña Jr., huge season for him as well. I mean, you know, absolutely, for totally different reasons than all the four or three that I've said. So, it's really exciting, but you're totally right to highlight Ozuna here, because I think that the Braves' fate really hinges a lot on what they'll be able to get out of him, especially in this early portion of the season when you don't have Acuña.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of it. It's like, you know, it feels like a lot of the comparisons being made to last year and this year is focusing around Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman and how those two are swapping out for each other. And not that that's not going to be important. I think that's going to be very pivotal to pay attention to and to see how Matt Olson slides in this lineup. Although it seems like Snit's going to treat him just like he did Freddie, where, right in that the number two hitter, if Mark Bowman is right, against lefties, very similar to how he treated things with Freddie Freeman, or squeezing sliding him down to third versus right-handers. However, that was why I just wanted to say that about Marcell Ozuna, because it was like, we forget how many home runs did he have in 2020.
It was 18. It was 18, but that's in 60 games. So if you essentially multiply that by three, then you're looking at like a 50 home run season, something like that.
Yeah. Not bad. Not shabby.
Shabby. It's all right. It's all right.
Serviceable. So that's why it's one of those, people asking about, did this lineup get better from last year? I say, yeah. From winning the World Series, especially, did this lineup get better from winning the World Series in a month?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Like, that, it just makes the World Series run stand out as like this, like literally like a movie montage type thing, because like that team just had no business putting up the numbers that they did throughout that run, especially in the playoffs. It's bizarre. It's so funny. I was actually just recently watching some highlights, and I came across the Tyler Matzik. There was like a season highlight package, and there was like the one with like Tyler Matzik catches the ball behind his head and, you know, turns the double play or whatever. And I feel like that was like the moment where like the Angels in the outfield kicked in, and then like everything just like started, like, you know, Eddie Rosario turns into like an all-star and all this stuff. Yeah, no, it's funny.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'll say this as we're kind of wrapping up here, just this idea of the amount of power that they are bringing to the lineup is going to allow guys to not be perfect coming out of the gate. Obviously, like, not everybody's going to be hitting well. Everyone's going to go through slumps. But when you're dealing with this type of lineup, it's going to be it's going to be more possible that happens, and it's not affecting this team in the same way that it would have a year ago.
Right.
Where you kind of, to go on that magical run, like they needed everybody to kind of be on their P's and Q's. And we obviously know over, 162 games, like, that's just not going to happen. So it's just seeing some of these names, you just kind of go like, I think they're going to be all right. I do. I truly think this team, is set for some success. It's exciting, the fact that, we will have another podcast before opening day, but opening day is next week, which just seems, we started off things, it seems so quick, but also just like, we're finally here.
Yeah.
So
and hopefully on that show, we'll have a ton of roster news. We may even have the opening day roster at that point that we can react to and stuff. So there should be a ton that happens that's pertinent to, the opening day series that happens between now and when we record next. That will be really fun to talk about. I honestly can't wait for next week's show, because there'll be so much news that happens. And we'll have much better picture of what this team is looking like, especially in the rotation, which we talked about last week.
Yeah, for sure. So, Joe, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, that's it. That's what I was going to say, how excited I am for for next week. And of course, this conversation was great too, Caleb. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we had a great time. But next week's where is really going to go down.
It's all right. You know, right. I get selling the people on come back next week. You know, we're always looking to improve. You know, so
right.
if you didn't like this one, try us out next week. It's fine. But with that, like, subscribe, do all the stuff that makes our bosses happy. That lets us keep doing this. For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for listening to Batter Up, and have a good one.
To be that.
It's so interesting, Joe, that you know, sometimes, right or wrong, you know, just things happen, a lot happens, and we gloss over things here or there. As we got talking about this lineup, you know, I look at the fact that we are now at a point, like, we don't question Marcell Ozuna being back. Like, that is a big deal.
It is.
I think there is, especially when it comes to, like, all of the legal stuff that he was brought into, you know, the video came out, and that was something that was going to, I had been very strong at one point in saying, this guy's not only not going to play for the Braves anymore, he's not going to play in Major League Baseball again. However, the video comes out, we see what actually transpired. It's not to the extreme level that was being thrown out.
I would recommend everybody just go look at the video for themselves to see what's on tape, because I don't know how those police officers ended up writing down in their report what they claim they saw when the video is literally on and sees them going into the room while it's happening. And literally the only thing you see is Ozuna kind of push his wife away. There's a shove. And that's it.
Well, and it's one of, I was just about to say, it is one of those awkward positions where it's like, it's not like, let's not act like this is a good thing. Let's not act like, you know, he is some saint.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Clearly a dysfunctional kind of domestic relationship here between the two of them.
And honestly, like, if, you know, I hope they go their separate ways, because there is a history with them.
Yeah.
And that had been brought up as part of this is that, you know, there was a history where, you know, he had to call because of things that she was doing. So it's just it's a bad situation. However, I think this idea that we were given, especially presented by the police department, was a very graphic, you know, like, despicable.
It was holding her, pinning her against the wall with a choke. And then hitting her with a cast, nothing like that was on the police footage.
Which is why I go back and say, like, I you know, it's one of those things that we've, like, completely brushed past now at this point. And it's just how, like, news cycles work in that way.
Yep.
However, that is why on opening day, Marcell Ozuna is not only a member of this team, but a prominent member of this team, as they're going to be looking for that offense that he had 2 years ago to be brought back. And it's just wild, because it's one of those, like, this team won a World Series without Marcell Ozuna and without Ronald Acuna Jr., and they're getting both of those players back, which is just like, boo.
Marcell Ozuna, in 2020, the COVID year, Marcell Ozuna led the National League in home runs and RBIs, and only if he had led in batting average would he have won the Triple Crown. And what was his batting average? His batting average was .338.
Yeah,
I think he came in second to Freddie. I think Freddie had the better batting average that year and took away the Triple Crown. And then Freddie obviously ends up winning MVP that year. Over Marcell Ozuna. But it's just, I mean, it's crazy. I think you're right. Like, I think we're not, I think people in general are not talking about Marcell Ozuna and the impact he's going to have on this team because of the circumstances. Because it's just uncomfortable to talk about a guy who's been through all this stuff, and I'm, you know, some of it absolutely brought upon himself. But, you know, when you just kind of look at where the Braves are, he's absolutely going to be a huge, you know, member of the team this season. And, you know, it goes to something I was saying on Andy and Randy today, Caleb, which is that, you know, they were asking me, like, who's this, like, a big year for? Like, who is it, like, a career, like, you know, one of those kind of career defining seasons? And I think that for the Braves, you have many guys who this season is important for individually, but all for different reasons. So I think that when you look at a guy like William Contreras, it's a big season for him for some of the reasons we talked about before, whether it's finding himself a new position or what he can provide for the team offensively, all that stuff. But I think when you look at Marcelo Zuna, it's also a super important year for him to kind of get his career back on track. But again, for totally different reasons than it would be for a young player. And then you look at a guy like Dansby Swanson, who it's also a big year for him. When you look at it, this is the last year that he's under team control and he'll be, you know, facing free agency, and the Braves will have to figure out what they want to do with him down the road. And a lot, I'm sure, you know, what he does this season will be, you know, a big factor in all that. Big season for him too, for different reasons than Ozuna and for a guy like Contreras. So it's that's what makes this team so interesting to me, is that you have so many of those types of players. Ron Cunha Jr., huge season for him as well. I mean, you know, absolutely, for totally different reasons than all the 4-3 that I've said. So it's really exciting, but you're totally right to highlight Ozuna here, because I think that the Braves' fate really hinges a lot on what they'll be able to get out of him, especially in this early portion of the season when you don't have Acuna.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of it. It's like, you know, it feels like a lot of the comparisons being made to last year and this year is focusing around Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman and how those two are swapping out for each other. And not that that's not going to be important. I think that's going to be very pivotal to pay attention to and to see how Matt Olson slides in this lineup. Although it seems like Snit's going to treat him just like he did Freddie, where, you know, right in that, the number two hitter, if Mark Bowman is right, you know, against lefties, very similar to how he treated things with Freddie Freeman, or squeezing, you know, sliding him down to third versus right-handers. However, that was why I just wanted to say that about Marcelo Zuna, because it was like, yeah, we forget how many home runs did he have in 2020?
It was 18. It was 18, but that's in 60 games. So if you essentially multiply that by 3, then you're looking at like a 50 home run season, something like that.
Yeah. Not bad. Not shabby.
Yeah, not too shabby. It's all right. It's all right.
Serviceable. So that's why it's one of those you know, people asking about, did this lineup get better from last year? I say yeah. You know, from winning the World Series, especially, did this lineup get better from winning the World Series in a month?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so crazy. Like, that, it just makes the World Series run stand out as like this, like literally like a movie montage type thing. Yeah. Because like that team just had no business putting up the numbers that they did throughout that run, especially in the playoffs. It's bizarre. It's so funny. I was actually just recently watching some highlights and I came across the Tyler Matzik. It was like a season highlight package, and there was like the one with like Tyler Matzik catches the ball behind his head and, you know, turns the double play or whatever. And I feel like that was like the moment where like the Angels in the outfield kicked in, and then like everything just like started, like, you know, Eddie Rosario turns into like an all-star and all this stuff. Yeah, no, it's funny.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'll say this as we're kind of wrapping up here, just this idea of the amount of power that they are bringing to the lineup is going to allow guys to not be perfect coming out of the gate. You know, like obviously, like, not everybody's going to be hitting well. Everyone's going to go through slumps. But when you're dealing with this type of lineup, it's going to be like that. It's going to be more possible that happens, and it's not affecting this team in the same way that it would have a year ago.
Right.
Where you kind of, I mean, to go on that magical run, like they needed everybody to kind of be on their P's and Q's. And we obviously know over, you know, 162 games, like, that's just not going to happen. So it's just seeing some of these names, you know, you just kind of go like, I think they're going to be all right. I do. I truly think this team is set for some success. It's exciting, the fact that we will have another podcast before opening day, but opening day is next week, which just seems, you know, like we started off things, it seems so quick, but also just like, we're finally here.
Yeah.
So
and hopefully on that show, we'll have a ton of roster news. We may even have the opening day roster at that point that we can react to and stuff. So there should be a ton that happens that's pertinent to, you know, the opening day series that happens between now and when we record next. That will be really fun to talk about. I honestly can't wait for next week's show because there will be so much news that happens. And we'll have a better, much better picture of what this team is looking like, especially in the rotation, which we talked about last week.
Yeah, for sure. So, Joe, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, that's it. That's what I was going to say, how excited I am for next week. And of course, this conversation was great too, Caleb. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we had a great time. But next week's where is really going to go down.
It's all right. You know, I get selling the people on come back next week. You know, we're always looking to improve, you know, so,
right.
if you didn't like this one, try us out next week. It's fine. But with that, like, subscribe, do all the stuff that makes our bosses happy, that lets us keep doing this. For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Thanks for listening to Batter Up, and have a good one.